What is it?
It's your future. It's called a Stargate.
Chevron 7 locked.
Welcome to Walking Through the Stargate. I'm Brent.
And I'm Zach.
This is episode 202, and we'll be talking about Stargate SG-1's episode, The Fourth Horseman, Part 2. There's a lot of numbers in there.
There are. You got the two, the O, and the two, and the fourth. And then you got that horseman in there.
And then there's one, SG-1.
Obviously. SG-1.
It's all in there. All right. Hi, friends. We're an independent podcast, if you can't tell. If you like what we've got going on, you can support the show at buymeacoffee.com/walkingthrough, or you can go to our website at WTTS.space.
Space.
And click the little coffee cup icon on the bottom right corner. Right there, you can buy one or two or three or 10 or whatever, how many coffees that you want right there, just as a one-time thing. I'm saying, hey, thanks. Everybody who's done that, super thank you so much. Your support is fantastic. We appreciate it. If you want to support us on a monthly basis, there's a little buttony thing at the very bottom of that widget. I think it says buy me a coffee. I can't remember. It's an oval. It's at the bottom. You click it. It goes to buymeacoffee.com/walkingthrough. That's this page with all of the stuff on there. If you want to do monthly things, they call them memberships. Right now, we just have the one tier at $3 a month if you want. Thanks to those who are supporting us there as well. We appreciate it tremendously. And we call it the general fund. It's just offsetting the cost of running this thing, running this little project we've got going on. Also in there, though, are wish lists, and there's some better mics, and there's a better mixer to make recording and processing the show a little easier. And then there's the wish list for people that like to inflict pain onto others, namely me. It is the every word just popped in my head all at once, as in like non-canonical, walking through Stargate to Infinity, gross, disgusting. Maybe I need more coffee this morning. I don't know. We'll find out.
I'm just listening because this is delightful.
You just let me just kind of flop around, and you know where I'm going to land? I'm going to land right here. The third wish list item is the wish list for people that want to hear me and Zach talk about our thoughts on the non-canonical animated Stargate series, Stargate Infinity. We've watched, I think, 8 episodes of the 24 that it has. If that thing funds, we will watch the next 2 and record reactions to each of those and post them on our main feed. But we're not going to do it until it funds, and that's okay. So, quote, thanks, unquote, to those who have contributed towards that wish list item. But genuinely, from the bottom of my heart, thank you to everybody else who is not contributing to that. Ha ha ha. But if you want to prove me wrong, go on there and throw some dollars that way. And then, you know, when it funds, we'll do that. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It's fine. It's fine. So that's Buy Me a Coffee. If anybody in your life wants to listen to our fantastic, excellent Stargate podcast content, you can recommend our show and tell them that they can find us basically everywhere where you can find a podcast. I say that because you can't find us anymore on Google Podcasts because Google Podcasts doesn't exist anymore.
Indeed.
And they're all like, yeah, you should shift over to YouTube Music. And so I was like, fine. So I tried to shift our show over to YouTube Music, and I was starting to upload things. And YouTube was all like, oh, yeah, we can't list these episodes. There's music in the background. And I'm like, you're going to DMCA us over, you know, music in the background with two idiots yammering over top of it. Hi, YouTube lawyers. If you're listening here, let me just tell you something real quick here. I understand that the early 2000s laws of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, in order to avoid risk, you want to advise your clients, namely Alphabet, to strip away any possible violation of that thing, because then it prevents Alphabet from liability in the tunes of millions of dollars, as was set in the precedent when that young man from I don't know where got sued by Metallica when he was downloading some albums off of Napster. I get it. I understand. But here's the thing. I'll let you in a little secret. Anybody who wants to listen to a song, which would be the target audience of somebody who wants to enjoy the music that the artist has produced, anybody who wants to listen to a song, they're going to try to listen to the song without idiots talking over top of it. I know it's a shock, but when you're listening to a song and you have people talking over the top of it, you're not actually enjoying the song. So striking down of audio content because you can hear that song in the background of the thing is not actually enjoying the song. It's not really the intended use of the license that is given to people. And then let's just fast forward it. I forgot, Zach, that I have yet to file us as a artificial intelligence corporation. And why that matters is because currently the argument for companies like OpenAI to be able to use the content of the universe is saying it's training data and you have to use it in order to get good training for these technologies. I forgot, Zach, that what we have here is actually training of an intelligence system where we have a multi-distributed neurocapacity network in the form of what we call listeners, unquote. And this use of this information in the form of these songs is actually in the training of this particular network. Zach, I forgot to do that. So I'll get on that so that I can tell Alphabet to go shove. I mean, to that we can do this. If you're not catching, friends, I'm kind of just I've had it up to here with the googly foo. So we're not on YouTube Music either.
Well, there you go.
I might cut all of that out. Maybe not. We'll leave it in anyway. Where can your friends find our podcasts? Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, iHeartRadio Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, and the right way to do it, which is Federated Technology. Go get yourself a podcast aggregator and search Walking Through the Stargate. You'll find our show. You'll be able to subscribe to the really simple syndication feed and just be able to listen to our stuff without anybody getting in the way. Alphabet. Hey, Zach.
Yes, Brent.
If a person wants to let us know that they found my legal theories just fascinating and they want to hear more of it, how might they reach out and let us know?
So if after listening to Brent talk about the challenges of understanding intellectual property and the use of music within that and protecting dollars and cents with corporations and from corporations and probably more likely from like little people, you know, if you all listen to that and thought, I need Brent to represent me in my process, then you can email us at walkingthroughthestargate @gmail.com and the law firm of Brentley Brentley.
Yeah, okay. Now you're obliging me to say under legal penalty that I am not a lawyer.
Just to be clear, all of this is farcical.
It's not legal advice. If you wish to actually get legal advice, you should consult a lawyer.
No. So if you want non-legal advice,
there we go.
Absolutely, which is different than illegal advice.
That's very true. Certain candidates for high offices get illegal advice. This is non-legal advice.
This is non-legal advice. Yes. You know, and some would say semantics and others would say, no, semantics are actually very important.
Oh, yes, they are.
Because semantics helps understand the difference between let's eat grandma and let's eat grandma.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the comma, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And that is semantics.
Yeah.
Now words, you get my rant.
Words matter. Yes. Right.
Words matter.
We're not going to talk about Stargate. This isn't a Stargate podcast.
It's definitely not a Stargate podcast.
Stargate.
Okay. Anyway, so you can email us at walkingthroughthestargate@gmail.com. You can, of course, go to Facebook and join the Facebook page and the group and all that stuff. You can go to our website, WTTS.space.
Space.
And you can actually, on there, get the link to the Facebook, which is cool, and also to the Discords, which is where a lot of information, a lot of stuff and community happens there on the Discord and all that stuff. And as Brent said, you can go to Buy Me a Coffee with all of that stuff.
Indeed.
All right. Well, Brent.
Yeah.
We should probably shift to what people are actually coming to our RSS feed for.
Yes. Yes.
I just would like to point out that this is precisely why Brent puts chapter markings in our podcast.
Yeah, so that you can skip to the parts that you actually want to listen to.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so The Fourth Horseman Part 2. This is episode 11 in season 9 of Stargate SG-1.
Yeah.
The director is Andy Makita. This is his fourth of four directing credits this season. He did Avalon Parts 1 and 2, and then he did Fourth Horseman Part 1 last week. He's got part two this week, and he then coasts for the rest of the season, just slacking off, drinking coffee or something. I don't know.
Just shouting from the back, like, you should change that.
Yeah, don't do it that way.
Thanks, Andy.
A little to the left.
Perfect.
Yeah, okay. So the teleplay is by Joseph Malazzi and Paul Mully.
Mm-hmm.
This is their third of seven writing credits this season. They did The Ties That Bind and Next Deus Machina.
Yes.
We have lots of guest actors. We have Cameron Bright as Orlin. We talked about him last time. We say hello again to Jason George as Jolan and Tony Todd as Lord Hykon.
Mm-hmm.
And we say again hello to Don S. Davis as General George Hammond. He's back. Yep. Okay. So Tony Amendola returns as Braytac.
Yep. Friend of the show.
We have William B. Davis as Ori Prior Damaris. This would be the cigarette smoking man that we've all talked about.
Yep.
Gary Chalk returns as Colonel Chekhov.
Yes.
We've got Gary Jones as Chief Master Sergeant Walter Radar Harriman.
Yay. Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. Lexa Doig as Dr. Carolyn Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Louis Gossett Jr. as Garrick.
Yep.
Sad news, folks.
Yeah, that's
earlier
right.
Earlier this week, Lou Gossett passed away.
Yeah.
And so we say peace and blessings to his family and those who are close to him
at
this time.
The world is a better place because of his work.
It is. And we have lost something and someone important with his passing. Shall I continue?
Yes.
Okay. We also have Noah Dalton Danby as Chara. We actually, this is the Jaffa that Teal'c and Braytac talk to while they're in Dakara.
Yeah. Right?
We've actually seen him before. We saw him in the episode Sacrifices in season 8, and we get to say hello to him again.
Nice. Was he the same character?
Yep. Same character.
Yep. Nice.
This character is returning. We have Mark Oliver, who plays Jean Lapierre. This would be the French ambassador who complains about things.
Yes.
He's actually a Canadian voice actor, not to be confused with the Italian-American horror actor of the same name, Mark Oliver.
Okay.
This guy's grandfather was the German film pioneer David Oliver.
Oh, cool.
Okay. I was looking at his credits. Most of what he does is voice acting. He's got over 100 IMDb credits, and almost all of them are voice acting credits.
Yeah.
His first IMDb credit came in 95, when he played multiple voices on 13 different episodes of Mobile Suit Gundam Wing.
Yeah, nice.
So, we have Kurt Evans, who plays Colonel Johnson. I believe that this is the one who's in the hazmat suit and yells at Orlin.
Yep.
He was born in 74 in Winnipeg. He's an actor and director known for iZombie, 2015, The Man in the High Castle, also 15, The Good Doctor in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually also in The Fourth Horseman Part 1, but he was uncredited for that.
Oh, I see. Okay. Very nice.
And then we had his first IMDb credit came in 1997. With The Adventures of Shirley Holmes. It's a television series. Mm-hmm. He was in the episode, The Case of the Second Sight.
Uh-huh.
And he played Greg Baxter in that. Greg Baxter. And of course, we did also see Chris Judge's brother, Jeff Judge, I think. Now I'm blanking on his name. I didn't write that down. He popped in there for just a little bit. In one of those scenes and said, look on screen or something like that.
Yeah.
So we got that. The original air date for this episode was January 6, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So this is about 4 months or so later.
Yeah.
Number one in the charts in the U.S., we were listening to Don't Forget About Us by Mariah Carey.
Yeah, I forgot about this.
I know who Mariah Carey is.
Yeah, me too. But I don't remember this song at all.
I don't know the song. Orlin was singing that song. You know, Don't Forget About Us. Sam.
Yeah, and then he did.
And then he did.
Yeah.
In the UK, they were listening to That's My Goal by Shane Ward.
Oh, okay.
Which I don't know Shane Ward, and I don't know that's my goal.
So it's extra good. Extra saucy.
Yeah, very saucy. So what is what are the dulcet tones behind this?
That's my goal. Okay. It's got to be oh man, I bet you it's a croon. I bet you it's like a, you know, like this guy's like a tenor singing a high love song. So it's all soft and like, you know, maybe not, maybe it's a banger, but I'm going to go with that. It's like real low and mellow and like, you know.
Oh, there you go. So just kind of chill.
That his goal is to you know, make her as happy as could possibly be and have a beautiful life and give her everything that she ever wanted. And, you know, basically all the things that 20 somethings promise other 20 somethings.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And nobody tells them anything. it's not going to be as fairy tale as you.
Yeah. No, there's gonna be some bumps along the way, friends.
Yep. Well, you know, when you are trying to figure out what your goal is, sometimes you just need to go on a walkabout. And when you go on a walkabout, you need a place to stay occasionally. And that's where you go to a hostel.
Okay.
So that's number one in the box office is hostel. And okay. Sometimes when you're at a hostel, I don't really know this because I've never been to one, but let's just pretend you need to watch a movie or maybe, sure. Maybe, you know what? Here's what it is. Like when you're at a hostel, you actually bring books to read because you're not certain what to do. And so what do? You bring one of the classic books out there that has been turned into a movie, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Okay.
You know, and then when you go through that wardrobe, you find yourself in a fantasy place, and all of a sudden, it becomes dystopian, and King Kong comes out.
That's unexpected.
this is dystopian. And then you find a friend whose name is Dick, and another guy, a friend whose name is Jane, and you say, let's have fun with Dick and Jane.
Yeah, okay, sure.
And you're all running around from King Kong because he's kind of angry at us for whatever reason. I don't know, maybe he hasn't had enough bananas or whatever, which is understandable. He's huge.
And he is banana, huge.
It's little. It's tiny. He could eat an entire banana tree and he would still be hungry.
Yeah, exactly.
We're all trying to figure out what we need to do, and we realize that if you buy all those bananas, they're cheaper by the dozen. Two.
Nice. Honestly, it ended well. Like, strong effort, and in no small part to the contortions that you had to do to put all these things together. Well done, well done.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you very much. So, what was happening in early January of 2006? Well, on January 4th, 2006, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon of Israel suffers a second and apparently more serious stroke.
Mm-hmm.
His authority is then transferred to the acting Prime Minister Ehud Olmert.
Mm-hmm.
On the 8th of January, there is a magnitude 6.9 earthquake with its epicenter just off the Greek island of Kythira.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to pronounce that. Kythira?
Probably.
Kythira. We'll say Kythira. It hits much of the country and is felt throughout the entire eastern Mediterranean Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Incidentally, we had our own earthquake in the United States on the east coast of things just yesterday.
Yep.
Actually, there were a couple of them. Yikes.
Yeah.
And then on January 9, 2006, if you're going through hell before the devil even knows... which is a single released by Rodney Atkins. It's released on the 9th, and that eventually becomes the song of the year for 2006.
Aha, okay.
So, that's what I got for what happened at this point in time. I have a little bit of trivia. Not a lot, a little bit.
Yeah.
So, in this episode, we see Landry going off-world.
Yep.
This is the first time that he's gone off-world.
Yeah.
Mitchell talks about some cheese, some Norwegian cheese.
Yes.
Getost. Getost. I can't. G-J-E-T-O-S-T. Probably. So if, you know, there you go. Apparently, Joseph Malazzi just loves to throw in food references to things. And of course, in this particular spot, you know, Mitchell was just talking about stuff, and it didn't matter two hoots what it was that he was talking about, right? The only point of in the story was that he was babbling at the prior. And
so was this written or was this ad-libbed?
No, so this was written as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
Because I was listening to the commentary, Paul Mully was on the commentary and he was talking that Malazzi loves to add food references to things.
Yeah.
And so when you get a place like this, when a character is just babbling and it doesn't really matter what they're saying,
it'll be about food. Yeah.
It'll be about food if Malazzi has anything to do with
it. Yeah.
So apparently, if you were to get the Region 2 or Region 4 DVDs for Stargate SG-1 Season 9, the previously on Stargate is missing.
That's a bummer.
It's not there for this episode, at least.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I found it interesting that when I was listening to the commentary, I go to my DVD, I put it in the player, and then I set up the commentary to track to play, and I hit go, and the whole previously on SG-1 is playing normally. And of course, if you've listened to any commentaries, the main track is full until the commentators start talking, and then it dies down, right? And they come up. And so Julie comes in and says, "I thought you were watching the commentary." I'm like, "Well, I thought I was too." and I had to wait. And sure enough, as soon as the previously on was finished and they went to, "And now, blah, blah, blah."
Yeah.
The commentators popped in there and I'm like, "Okay, yep, we're good.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
So, there were a couple of different times in this episode where they had, a news reporter on the TV that they were scanning across the room, right?
Yes.
And that was Dawn Chubai and Dagmar Midcap. And they are both actual real-life reporters in the Vancouver area.
Oh, fun. That's nice.
And one of the things that they were saying on the commentary is that, for their money, this would have been Andy Makita and Paul Mully. They were talking. For their 2 cents, if you ever have a news reporter on screen like this, you need to find a real news reporter because they just have a tone and the quality of how they say things is just special and unique, and it is very hard to just mimic that. You wouldn't think so, but I actually believe it.
If you have not seen any video of news reporters like in their own home doing their news reporter voice about like mundane things that are happening in their own home, it's hilarious. It is absolutely hilarious.
I believe it. So then let's see here. This episode in other language titles is The Fourth Horseman, Horseman of the Apocalypse, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Return of Orland Part 2. Yes, the same as last week.
Same stuff.
Okay. So, just to give a timestamp for all you dear listeners, after we record this episode, we are actually going to record a Second Chances episode,
yes,
which will be released later on in this month. And so when I was spending my time this morning, I was watching that episode of Second Chances. We'll get to that when we get to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have as much time this morning to write a synopsis. And so I turned to our good dear friend of the show, Mr. GPT, first name chat. to help me out.
Sure.
Now, I thought about what should we do here? And so I told Mr. ChatGPT the following. I said, Orlin is a character in Stargate SG-1. He is an ascended being who has knowledge of what happens in the galaxy. He is quiet and thoughtful and has returned to our plane of existence to help us out in a time of need. Please rewrite the following text in the voice of Orlin.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So ChatGPT replies, of course, let me try to capture Orlin's demeanor. And he says this. In the vast expanse of existence, there are moments where the threads of destiny weave together, calling upon beings such as myself to intervene. I, Orlin, once ascended, now walk amongst you, guided by the whispers of the cosmos. My presence here is not born of impulse, but of purpose. For I have witnessed the ebb and flow of galaxies and know the delicate balance that must be upheld In this time of uncertainty, I offer my counsel wrapped in silence and contemplation.
Oh.
For the path ahead is shrouded in shadows, and clarity is a beacon we must seek together.
That's not dramatic.
And so, the synopsis of The Fourth Horseman Part 2, as told by Orlin.
Yeah.
So, before I get to there, this first part, you know, normally it says previously on SG-1. Orlin says, in the tapestry of SG-1's journey, threads of fate intertwine, weaving a narrative fraught with peril and redemption.
Wow. Okay. It's going all in.
Oh, yeah. As SG-6 returns tainted by the prior's plague, I, Orlin, am drawn back to the mortal realm, my ethereal form shedding to embrace humanity once more. The quest for a cure unfolds, a quest reliant upon the essence of the very being who wrought this affliction.
Mm-hmm.
Lieutenant Colonel Cameron Mitchell and Dr. Daniel Jackson, stalwart companions in this cosmic odyssey, devise a plan to ensnare the wayward prior, wielding technology born of ingenuity and necessity. Meanwhile, Garrick, swayed by the seductive whispers of origin, succumbs to its influence, transfigured into a harbinger of the Ori's will.
Oh, yes.
In this intricate dance of light and shadow, the stage is set for a confrontation that will test the resilience of spirit and the depths of conviction.
I am so excited.
Oh, yeah. And so now we would say, and now, on with the show, or whatever, the continuation.
Yeah.
But no. Orlin says, in the cosmic theater where destinies converge, the struggle between light and shadow unfolds with poignant clarity.
I feel like I'm watching one of those plays where the narrator is really, really, really moving the show.
Sometimes you need the narrator to really move things along.
Yeah, well, this narrator's working hard at it. Okay.
All right. Garrick, now a vessel of Ori dogma, seeks to sway the hearts of the Jaffa Council to embrace a path fraught with peril. Yet, amidst the looming darkness, Teal'c stands resolute, his resolve a beacon of defiance upon Chulak's ancient soil. As Lieutenant Colonel Cameron Mitchell and his valiant team prepare for the inevitable clash, revelations surface amidst the Sodan, revealing the insidious nature of Origin's grip. Lord Hykon's admission, a testament to the atrocities committed in the name of false gods, ignites a flame of rebellion within the hearts of the Sodan warriors. In a dance of strategy and sacrifice, SG-1 and SG-22 converge, wielding the prior disruptor as a weapon against the very source of the plague that ravages Earth. With precision born of desperation, they capture the wayward prior, extracting the vital essence needed to quell the tide of suffering.
Yeah.
Also known as, they take a blood sample.
They take a blood sample. Capture the extracting the vital essence.
Meanwhile, Teal'c's courage knows no bounds as he confronts Garrick, a poignant reminder of the enduring legacy of freedom etched in the blood of Jaffa warriors past.
Hmm.
Amidst the tumultuous clash of ideologies, Major General Henry Landry, guided by my whispers, confronts the chilling truth behind the Ori's relentless pursuit. The annihilation of the ancients!
Oh, no!
In the heart of Earth's sanctuary, Garrick, faced with the ultimate sacrifice, embraces his fleeting moments of freedom, a beacon of defiance amidst the encroaching darkness. Through his selfless act, hope blossoms anew as Dr. Carolyn Lamb harnesses the essence of healing, crafting a beacon of salvation amidst the plague's relentless onslaught!
Oh, ho, 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 ho!
Wow! Yet, even amidst the triumph of light, shadows linger, as the toll of cosmic battles exacts its price upon my essence. Bound by mortal frailty, I, Orlin, am but a whisper in the winds of memory, confined to the labyrinth of the human mind. Wow.
I know, right? Right?
Where solace is found amidst the gentle embrace of forgotten puzzles and fleeting moments of connection. The end.
The end.
That's not overly dramatic at all, is it?
I know. I know. If you spend enough time with large language models, you can learn to spot when you're reading something, you can almost always spot, oh, this is written by a current large language model.
Oh, yeah.
They have tendencies.
So, Brent.
Yeah.
The Fourth Horseman Part 2. What'd you think?
I liked it. I definitely liked it. I am still a fan of this Ori storyline. I really am. I thought that the confrontation, the discussion between Teal'c and Garak about the worthiness of a god, Zach, you brought up this point, and I was standing by the sort of the different viewpoint that says that while what you're saying makes absolute sense, I think that it makes absolute sense because we are operating in a framework of Western ideology where it's possible that there could exist another way of looking at the world, though I don't share it, where you don't judge a god's worthiness of worship based off of whether or not they are benevolent. But you know what I mean? Like there could be different criteria.
Right, right.
Doesn't really matter. This is a show for Western. You know what I mean? Like I recognize I'm being precious when I have that kind of a distinction. But I was noticing it. I was thinking about it when that dialogue was happening. However, that quibble set aside, I think that the storyline is maturing rather nicely. I am now shifting my thinking again to recognizing, oh, this was episode 11. We're in the second half of the season. We got 9 episodes left. And as is tradition, do they know that they get a season 10 or not? And I think the answer is that they did not until a certain point. So we're once again trying to wrap things up, right? Like we're kind of forced to get to the end of something here because this is a story about heroes and the heroes win. But getting now to the spot where we have been given the privileged information about what their motivations are.
Mm-hmm.
Why they are suddenly interested in the Milky Way galaxy and what we might be able to do to prevent it, with the caveat that it was possible for this Ori to suppress the effects of whatever it was that we were using to suppress his abilities, right? Like it's not going to be a cakewalk,
right?
Which is good. That's good. Another thing that I thought was a little flimsy, but you know, I'm shrugging my shoulders like, what are you going to do? I thought it was a tad bit flimsy that the Sodan were apparently so ready to come back to rationality. It felt just a tad bit incongruous. There we go. That's the word I'm looking for.
Okay.
It felt a little bit incongruous that that a group of people. Let me back this up. On screen, we were shown that the Sodan were, by and large, with some notable dissent voices, willing to drink the Kool-Aid. And it feels a little flimsy that then they are willing to reject the Kool-Aid almost as fast. In my mind, in the story, it makes sense for them to be willing to drink the Kool-Aid so fast because while on screen and within the story, we are presented with XYZ evidence, I am supposed to augment it. I'm supposed to exaggerate it and imagine that they are a group of people that are presented with something that resembles evidence so powerful that they feel compelled to follow this path, this particular path. It's a right. little like how on a television show, whenever people visit a planet, they're always in a village or a city, and we are supposed to exaggerate and extrapolate, expand our imagination to say, this is the whole planet. You know, anytime that you start thinking that way, you start laughing because it's like, well, this is probably impossible because they're literally in one spot of a planet. This is probably not the whole place. But you're supposed to kind of project that out there. So same with this. You know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense on the surface why someone would walk up and stamp a staff on the ground and have a light flash and have people like, you know, start falling over dead and have everybody go, oh, we got to follow this person. You know, like it would be more nuanced. There would be more intrigue. You know, it would take longer. But this is a TV show. So you're supposed to just go with it.
Yeah. Well, so let me quick comment about that.
Sure.
Right. So we got to keep in mind, I won't disagree with what you're saying, right? It does move fast. That said, I think it's plausible. And here's why. The Sodan are Jaffa warriors. So they are steeped in the grand mythos of Jaffa.
Yeah.
And while the Jaffa have been subjugated by the Gua'uld, and some have drank the Gua'uld Kool-Aid and others have not, but regardless of which side of that line is, there's always been, apparently, as far as we can tell from the previous 8.5 seasons, within Jaffa culture, which is a little bit monolithic in some ways, but, you know, it's a TV show.
Right.
Has this sense of enlightenment and moving towards enlightenment.
Yeah.
And they have a clear picture of what that enlightenment is. And on some level, it is an enlightenment where honor is realized.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's their nature. Now, and of course, there's this sense of, you know, ascending to a higher plane of existence, et cetera, et cetera. But these are the various layers of their cultural, for lack of a better term, religion.
Yes.
I don't think it's near as organized as a religion.
Right.
So then you have the Sodan, who have broken away from Gua'uld oppression. So they've never had to live with that, although they understand its existence and they recognize it. And so you can assume that this sense, and from what we see when we meet them the first time, this is happening, right? They're developing this cultural understanding or belief toward this honorable higher plane of existence. Now, when a prior comes and says, the Ori, blah, 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 and they have power and they can promise this ascension, that's something that they have been wanting for a long time. And so there is a seduction toward that. And then what happens in this episode, as told by Hykon, is they're told to go and quell disbelievers. Okay, that's fine. And they were expecting that these disbelievers were especially militant and,
yes,
you know, jerk faces,
yes,
that needed to be taken out.
Yes.
And they come and they find farmers.
Yes.
Right? They find people who are living their life, trying to do it the way that, you know, keeping their head down, whatever it is. But they're not violent and they're not trying to destroy and, you know, they're just people.
Yeah.
And within the context of this greater sense of honor and enlightenment that the Jaffa have established as part of their cultural milieu from the very beginning, it's understandable that walking into that kind of situation would be the catalyst that would make this group say, hey, you know, Ori. And in fact, we see the same thing in Garrick later on,
mm-hmm,
when Teal'c engages him, right? There's that sense of, wait a second, there may be something here, but my ideals of what my goal is doesn't include this other thing. And if the here is asking me to do this, then the here isn't actually what I'm reaching for.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what kind of power it has or you know, whatever. But if it's not actually going to give me what I'm looking for, because now it's clear, then I need to resist it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it fast? Yes.
Yeah, it is fast. But I mean, yeah, I get it.
But I think it's plausible and it fits the nature of the Jaffa and such.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, continue. So then Garrick's arc, I think, is actually, you know, quite similar. For some reason, that didn't feel quite as fast. Maybe because it was like a person talking to a person. You know what I mean? Like, if it's one-on-one, you can imagine that one, you know, the person who's being convinced could come to that conclusion relatively quickly. If it's a whole society, it's a little like, whoa, everybody, you know, you got the whole people.
We've also seen Garrick a lot more than the Sodan, right? We've only,
yes,
seen, this is the second time we've seen the Sodan on screen. And the last time we saw the Sodan, you know, we thought, okay, they're honorable, blah, 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 all this stuff, Mitchell. But it looks like, when we walk away from that thinking, oh, looks like they drank the Ori Kool-Aid. This isn't good.
Yeah.
So we come back and, you know, we're lucky that we don't have to try to convince them to, you know, stop drinking the Kool-Aid. You know, it does feel fast because we don't see them on stage. We don't see them on screen.
Right.
Garrick, we have seen, we've already seen Garrick in at the beginning of Fourth Horseman, reject, the call to annihilate, right? Because he went to Chulak, I think, at the beginning of that, and he talked to Teal'c, and he's like, no, okay, I'm not going to kill you, because I don't think it's right. And he goes back, and then he gets chastised by his Ori prior, and then they take him, and then they show him the power and all this stuff, and he becomes the prior himself,
yep,
et cetera, et cetera. So we see a lot more of Garrick's story.
That's true. You're right. Yep. So I like where we're going. I also worry about where we're going. I think I can smell a shark. I think I can smell a shark, and I think I can see a ramp up ahead, and I think we're on water skis. I think we're about to jump a shark. I think that it's setting it up. It makes sense. Okay, first, what I'm about to say makes sense as far as like a storyline is concerned.
Okay.
Two, it makes sense if this is the last season of Stargate SG-1. It's not. But, you know, like, where I think the story is going, this is working. This works. But it feels like something is about to happen that is going to make any subsequent story feel just about pointless to even talk about. It feels like we are about to have a clash between the Ori and the Ancients in the Milky Way. It feels like we can handle the Priors, but we need somebody to handle the Ori, and the only people around that can handle that are the Ancients. And so it feels like we're about to spend the next 9 episodes trying to convince Ancients somehow to get involved. Probably what's going to happen is that 7, 8 of those episodes are going to be us getting our butts handed to us. With modest improvements or modest gains into what we're able to do, but just getting just smacked around and then just trying to plead with any of the Ancients who will listen to us that they need to get involved, that it is imperative that they get involved, only for them to get involved in the last episode and, you know, blast a frequency throughout the entire galaxy through all the Stargates so that all the replicators fall apart. Or wait, no. Do something so that the Ori are all obliterated and the day is saved. And that's fine. And that makes sense. And then we have season 10. Like, what's season 10 going to be about?
So let me. I believe.
Well, you can't say anything.
No. I believe that. A season 10 for Stargate was known relatively early in the process of season 9.
Okay, so there's still a little bit of hope.
I don't think that the writers are like, oh, we've got to try to finish this story here in 9 episodes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're still in the building stage of things. So I think some of your fears, you know, you might be able to set them aside for a bit.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Actually, that's quite good news because it would literally mean that we would have 20 episodes of like, what do you do? you already hit the big red button of like worst threat ever. Like, where could you go from there? Internal strife. Anyway, so. Yeah, this episode overall, I think it was, so this feels good. This wraps up that particular storyline well enough. I found myself with the pandemic thing. I found myself towards about maybe 3/4 of the way through the episode, shifting from that like wry, gnawing laughter that kind of eats away at the inside of your soul. Like, we lived through this. This is not how it went. That it shifted into imagining a world where quarantines are actually respected.
In a world where quarantines are respected.
One thing that is very different.
Attempts to quell an international virus are successful.
I know. The one truly, and you know, you've heard other people say this, and you know, by no means am I the only one who said this. The reason why so many quarantines failed was because coronavirus, the COVID-19 was not lethal. It was lethal enough, and it was lethal enough in vulnerable populations, but it was not lethal enough. If people were dying agonizing deaths within 48 hours of contracting the thing, like, nobody would have left their house.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's because it was as gentle as it was, is that it kept spreading. That's why, so this is apples and oranges, because this particular virus apparently, like, kills a person in what? Few days, something like
a
that.
A few days.
Yeah.
Although, you know, the international death toll was only about 3,000.
I know. I thought that was so
which
charming.
Which is like, oh, how quaint.
I know. But, you know, so I was, in this universe where we discovered a Stargate in Giza in the 1920s, and we are using it to go hop around the galaxy, and we have a big giant faster than light spaceship at our disposal and friends across the galaxy, across many galaxies. In this universe where all this is happening, this is also a universe where people take a contagion threat seriously and they stay away. So that was a nice thought. Let's see, what else about this episode? Oh, Orlin. I thought they did an okay job in kind of wrapping up that story. I think that you know, creepy Orlin from the, you know, the toaster days has successfully been, like, removed from our collective consciousness because now it's this, you know, I don't know, kid who is stuck in a long-term care facility for the rest of his life, I guess. I don't know. That's sad.
It is sad.
You know, they stopped it with the whole, like, I still love you, Sam thing, which was good. I'm glad they stopped that. You know, it was fine enough. It was a useful story avenue. Oh, I mean, I guess his presence at the tail end of the final confrontation, that kind of mattered a lot. That was sort of
when he talked with Damaris and such.
That was the ace in the hole type of thing. Like that was really core. And it moved our big story along. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty all right. Yeah. So, you know, what did I think about this one? I liked it. There was a lot about it that worked well. There was a lot about it that was enjoyable. I like the banter between Jackson and Mitchell. I think that those actors are doing a good job. I think I don't think they're trying to recapture the Daniel Jack dynamic. I think they're just trying to find their own thing. I think Daniel's a bit of a wry jokester, and so it's just showing up like this.
Yeah,
which is fun. It's great. It was an enjoyable time. I really liked it. So what about you? What did you think about this episode?
So yeah, I like this episode. I think it's a really good episode. I think that there are really good emotional beats to it. You know, the ending with Orlin in, you know, the care of in that care facility implies that this kid has damaged his brain so much that, I mean, A, he's forgotten about Sam.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually a good thing in terms of, you know, just let's just move on from that.
Yeah.
But it's just a sad moment. You know, there's just that melancholy of just sitting there like, you know, what, it's just sad that, you know, Noble, I guess, in some ways, you know, he was willing. He knew this going in.
Yeah.
And what's sad is that now it's happened and he doesn't know it anymore. And that just pulls on my heartstrings.
And I just realized, I'm sorry for interrupting, that his last line was actually like kind of emblematic. It was a bit of a motif.
Yeah. You know, I've already put the border on, the edge on. You can help me with the inside.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's a shell, and presumably the physical health of this boy is fine, and so he's going to grow up. But he's got now 70 years of of this. I'm curious if you know how much brain damage was done. How much new learning can he do? Is he stuck in that facility? You know, could he grow up and have a productive life, whatever we mean by productive life?
Well, I suspect that we will never see Orlin the character again.
I think that you are very accurate in that.
Which means that we can make up our own story.
You know, I would wager that that Orlin, as he grows, maybe is not ever able to fully live on his own. Although maybe perhaps, you know, living by himself, but having a social worker or somebody who checks in on him weekly.
Yeah.
But I suspect, like, if you have the mental capacity to do a puzzle at that age, as you grow, I mean, he might plateau at, you know, the mental capacity of a 16-year-old or whatever it is, 12-year-old.
Sure.
But we know people who have had the mental capacity, you know, who live long lives and lives that they are, that they, for want of a better term, are happy, right?
Yeah. You know,
they're not productive members of society in the way of capitalism.
Right.
But they are, you know, productive members of the society in terms of embracing the diversity of us.
They're valued members in their community.
Yes.
And the word valued is there on purpose.
Yeah.
It's not a word you just throw in. It's there is your value, economists.
Yeah. You know, I mean, so like the reality is that not all value can be translated into dollars and cents.
That's right.
And if one insists that the only value that matters is value that can be translated into dollars and cents, then we lose a lot of value.
Oh, sure do.
You know, so
there's a whole bunch of value that just got left on the table. That's not very economical.
It's
economists.
Not, you know, so let's understand value as something non-economical, which is back to that same conversation between illegal and non-legal, right?
Yes.
Right.
And which also then brings us back to semantics.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I think, you know, when we first see Orlin appear in this, in part one, I'm like, especially the first time I watched it, I'm like, oh, Orlin.
Oh,
I don't need to see Orlin again. And then you see Orlin say, I still have feelings for you, Sam. I'm just sad that in my present form, I can't, maybe in a few years. And I'm like, eh!
Yeah, and you want to just throw up your jello right there.
Yes. I didn't like it. But once we move past that and we get to the story of this ancient who has become a boy, who is stressing his mind out so hard that he is causing physical brain damage,
right,
and literally losing the memories that make up who he is.
Mm-hmm.
There is a tragedy there that artistically redeems the character, and you know makes it, you know, worth watching, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
So I really like that. I thought the Jaffa story was really good. Obviously, we didn't see a whole lot of Jaffa battles because they didn't, but we saw a lot more Jaffa here, and it wasn't just simply, let's talk about what we're going to do. We actually see them do it.
A little bit.
Admittedly, what are we? Let's talk about what we're going to do. Well, we're going to go there, we're going to stand up to them, and then we're going to talk to them.
Yes.
And so then they go, and then you talk to them.
Which made me wonder, and Zach, you might know this. It suddenly occurred to me, was Christopher Judge dealing with any kind of like physical like injury or, you know what I mean? Like maybe the reason he's not jumping around with the staff anymore is because it's like, yeah, his knees are blown out or something. You know what I mean? It might be a physical constriction and they're like, you know what? We're going to have some intrigue here.
I don't think it has much to do with that, although it's possible that there's some there. I think that in future episodes, we do see more physicality from Teal'c.
Maybe his knees got better.
Maybe his knees got better. I mean, keep in mind that the person that he would be doing this type of physicality with would be Lou Gossett Jr.
I mean, it doesn't have to be. I know what you're saying. But
At this point in time, when I'm his age at that time, which is going to be, you know, call it 20 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to do that now.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Understood.
I think part of it also is in these later seasons, one of the things that they are trying to give Christopher Judge is more acting stuff to sink his teeth into that's not just the big beefy Jaffa, you know, burly guy who goes punches somebody.
But then I think that actually amplifies my criticism then, because we're not getting enough time for character to be developed, right? We're just given these moments where Teal'c has to react to something.
So I think in this episode, though, we actually get a number of beats that help to develop character. You get him talking to his mentor, Braytek, and Braytek is like, you should be the leader if all of this pans out.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I understand what you're saying, and my heart is always going to be with the Jaffa people. But I also know that if my heart's going to be here with these people and we have this threat, then I need to be over here.
Yeah.
Because that's where the front line is.
Yeah.
And then you got the turnaround. It says, know what, Braytek? You should be the one who takes the lead of the Jaffa nation when all of this cleans out. And there's that sense of when, not if.
Yes.
From him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then I thought that conversation that he has with Garrick on was really, really, I loved that. You get that feeling that Teal'c is he's willing to die, but he's also convinced that he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Because he's already convinced before he steps down onto that grass that he is going to be able to reach the Jaffa that is still in Garrick and not the Ori Prior, and is going to be able to change his mind. Mm-hmm. You know, and so the confidence he walks into that situation, I thought, is really well done.
This episode absolutely had some of the best Jaffa content that I have seen in quite a long time. I will admit that part of the joy that I had gotten from Jaffa content in seasons past was the noble punchy punchy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I liked it. And I'm not getting a whole lot of punchy punchy. And so, you know what? I guess I think that part of my critique on it is that something that I was just kind of thinking about just a second ago when we were talking about Orlan, how Samantha Carter is the emotional heart of the show. And I was thinking about that, like, I think I get it. It certainly makes sense for early 2000s television, but I'm also realizing that that all of the emotional connection has been given, as in the responsibility sense, has been given to Samantha Carter, and not all of it, but enough of it. You know, anytime that there's supposed to be a heart-touching moment, it's almost always with Samantha Carter there. And that's neither good nor bad. It's just I was, you know, seeing it and then thinking to myself, well, you know, why not have it be Mitchell? Why not have it be Jackson? You know, I was just kind of thinking, like, why not? Why does it always have to be Sam? In the same vein. Oh, boy, I lost my train of thought. We were talking about Christopher Judge and Teal'c.
Well, like the combat stuff was always Teal'c. Is that the direction that you're going?
I mean, maybe that was it. It's that might be it, in so much as, like, you know, if the show is willing to kind of typecast, again, not quite the right word, but if the show is willing to typecast where the emotional center is, then why not typecast where the fists are? And if Christopher Judge wants to have more expansive acting opportunities, I guess I just kind of see this as a challenge for the story and the writing. And you know, every time that when I identify something as something that can be resolved through good storytelling, I then expect the story writers to do it. You know, right? You're right. Yep. Like, it's like, yep. Of all the things that is the most flexible, that has the most opportunity for creative problem solving, it's within the story. Like, that's where you can have the most advantage and the most positive change in any situation. You can do it within the story. You can, you know, if something's not working, you can reverse to a point and try again and try to retcon this thing, you know, try to make it work. So give our fist center something challenging to work with at an emotional level as well at the same time, so that your actor is satisfied trying to dig into this character and your viewers are sitting here enjoying the ride that's going along with the development of the character and then having some catharsis when a fist gets swung. I'm off my stool, off my high horse.
I think part of what's going on also is, I mean, this, you know, did you have to write it this way? Who knows? But within the Jaffa story, the fighting has moved to be, well, there's two things. One, when there is combat with the Jaffa, it has moved into the realm of mass combat, where, you know, ship to ship combat.
Yeah, fleets.
And not individual combat. Could you write that in such a way? Yeah, you could. The other also is, what other combat is happening within the Jaffa realm is political.
Yeah.
As you've got this fledgling nation that's trying to understand how it's supposed to be itself apart from others, and connected with people who are not them, and recognize that that's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard. And that's where you're seeing a lot of the combat coming in. When you get to the mass battles, I mean, this is a practicality, the reality of television shows.
Right. Yeah.
Those are super duper expensive to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can't do that very often because it's just too expensive. And so then that reality forces the writers to try to create combat in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have the combat between Teal'c and Garak that is a combat of words about the heart of what it means to be Jaffa, which gets back to a previous conversation we had earlier today.
Yes. Yeah.
So, the pandemic in this episode. It's very clean.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
but also, you know, the reality is that the story that they were telling is not the story about the pandemic.
Right.
The story is really about the relationship between the Ori and the Milky Way galaxy.
Right.
That was the pandemic was an element of that. And for financial reasons, we can't show a global pandemic on screen with hundreds of thousands of people getting sick all across the globe. They don't have the funds for that.
Sure.
And so we have to tell that story in other ways, which is, Walter coming in and saying, here we have a report about blah, 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 blah. Oh, my goodness. And then you have the pan and you have the news anchors saying things as they describe the continuation and the development of that. I think it was done as good as could be done.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's a storyline that is unfortunately very fresh in our collective memory right now. And it's a storyline trope that we have seen a number of times before. And in most of those times, in a terrible situation, the contagion might still break free, but it wasn't for lack of trying. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, like that's always been the story. And then we go through it and we're like, oh, well, turns out there's this whole other human condition that comes into play and just foils the plans of a whole lot of people. So,
yeah, you know, that's also one, you know, I mean, in 2005 was when they were filming this and writing the story, right? The idea of a global pandemic of this quality was a hypothetical reality. And we've seen examples of it in other places, you know, like in history.
I mean, well, we also had gone through a couple of epidemics that gave us at least a template to assume what would happen in a pandemic. So there was the SARS epidemic that happened. Well, I think, so here, in 2002 or 3.
Here's the catch is that the difference between an epidemic and a pandemic is that a pandemic is an epidemic that has spread.
Well, yes.
It has lost containment.
That's why we use those words. Yes. Exactly. But I'm just saying that it was rational to assume that the actions taken at the epidemic level would just scale up, you know, like we would do this, but with more. And again, I mean, like, we got to remember that these things are apples and oranges. If there was an Ebola pandemic in 2020, it would have been very different. Yes. Absolutely.
And of course, also, we have to think in mind that, like with COVID and the coronavirus, we thought, or at least, you know, the population thought, whether higher ups thought it or not, it's harder to tell. But in part, we thought this because it was told us that everybody go into your house, stay in your house. This will be a couple of weeks and then we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Right. And then it wasn't fine. And then it kept going and just lingering.
Yeah.
And then people are like, I can't live in my house any longer. And so then you get into the other pressures of society.
Yeah.
When we extrapolate that into this particular episode, this whole process, especially if they only lost 3,000 people globally, was still not more than a 3 to 4 week process, probably closer to 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was getting the impression that it was days.
You know, I think we're talking about, you know, roughly a 14 day window or so. Which is scary how fast this thing potentially was moving.
Yeah.
In 14 days. But, you know, in this episode, in this storyline, it took 14 days and they were actually able to get a hold of it and hang, you know, and
with the selfless act of Garrick. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we were very fortunate that we had Garrick who could do that for us. But that, you know, for Joe Blow on the street, you know, for us on the street, you know, what we see is, oh my gosh, there's this global pandemic. It's going everywhere. Right. What are we going to do? Borders are being closed. I'm like, oh, they have now found a vaccine for it and they are getting the vaccine out. And it's moving quickly. What's impressive is how fast they were able to mass produce that vaccine.
I mean, yeah, there's also, like, you know, we're just going to ignore the fact that there's probably conspiracy theorists that are just having a heyday right now. But
oh, sure. But here again, all of that is not ultimately the story that was being told.
Correct.
In this episode, the story in this episode was being, you know, how do we fight against, you know, how do we stand up and say no to somebody, even if they're a big bully and they have way more power than we do.
Now, here's an interesting thing that just crossed my mind.
Okay.
Garrick becomes an aura prior.
Correct.
Garrick gets convinced that this is not the right thing to do. He goes to the SGC and he uses his prior powers one last time to heal everybody there, and then that's it for him. And yes, the evidence is now strongly suggesting that when a prior self immolates, they are dead, even though once again there was nothing left of this guy. Anyway, I digress. I wonder, this is so anthropocentric it's ridiculous, but I wonder if one of the aspects of this story is that while there have been humans in other galaxies that clearly the Ori were using and who were the prey of the Ori.
Right.
I wonder if there have not been examples of quite as selfless bravery, as in, like, I wonder if Garrick's sacrifice is something that might have surprised them. Like, oh, wait, what? Wait, what? These humans are willing to do that? Oh, dear. That changes the calculations a little bit.
Possibly.
It's so ridiculously, like, you know, how special are we? But still, it's just for a story point of view, I wonder if they were just not expecting that.
Well, I mean, it's certainly possible. I don't know. But one of the things that we do know here in this situation is that, like, the human evolution within the Ori's galaxy, I don't remember specifically which galaxy it is, doesn't matter. Basically, the Ori seeded them and evolved them. I don't know, whatever. You know, so, like, from their inception across the galaxy, they were worshiping Origin.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was just part of the milieu. It was just part of the DNA, although probably not actually DNA, but, you know, it's just the cultural foundation of that galaxy and the people there.
Mm-hmm.
And all they ever had to deal with are small pockets of, you know, individuals, you know, Salus and
yes.
What's his name? You know, and a few people here. So now you're looking at an established religion.
Yeah.
That promises this, and doesn't matter if it succeeds, you know, if they actually do that or not, but that's what they're promising. And now if there are individuals who are resisting, they have a strong enough hold that they can generally zap out these resistances before they get into galactic problems.
Yeah.
Now they come to the Milky Way galaxy, and I mean, it's a different strategy when you have to try to and develop this.
Yeah.
Because now you have systems in place already from before that can create resistance pockets that are far more organized than anything that they ever had in their home galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that plays a role in all of this too. I'm sure we could talk more.
Yes,
but we probably should shift gears.
I believe we should as well.
So this is when I ask you, my dear friend Brent.
Yes.
The Fourth Horseman Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
How many chevrons are you going to give it?
Solid. It's a solid story. I had a good time with it. Even the parts that I kind of are criticizing, they aren't the worst. And as I reflect, parts of the things that I was criticizing had kind of more to do with the season, not this episode. I think this is a 6 out of 7. I think that it's a strong 6. I think that I'm trying to think of what could possibly make it a 7. I don't know. It's definitely not a 7. I'm not feeling 7 vibes off this one. But, you know, I had a good time. It moved the story forward. I got a lot of good moments with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it was just an enjoyable time overall. 6 out of 7 for me. What about you? How many do you give it?
You know, I'm actually going to give it 7.
Okay.
I think it is a solid episode. I think it takes what was given in episode or in the first part and really develops on it. I think that the way I really like how Teal'c and Garrick interact in this episode.
Yeah.
I really like that development. I think that the fight with the Prior is fun. So, you know, some of the special effects are a little bit weird. You know, like, oh, yeah, he's definitely on a wire right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Look at him spin. You know, but, you know, I mean, you let that slide.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a 7 out of 7. I think that it's a really solid story that that gives us a ton of really clear meta information about the Ori and Ancients and what the goals are and, you know, and now we have clearer evidence that what the Ori are doing is not actually in the best interest of the people they are doing it to.
Yeah, we got some good, nice, like, information to help us actually understand this.
Yep. So, you know, I think, and I can't really think of anything to knock it down.
All right.
So I'll give it a 7.
Right on. Cool.
All right. All right. Let's go to our predictions.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. On the Facebooks, we have Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Paul says, "The Ori have sent me a message, and it says Brent will give it a 6.
Ooh, yes.
And Zach will give it a 6.5.
Oh, so close, Paul.
So close, Paul.
Well done.
The drama, the tension, and the obvious recollection of COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
Is what he says.
Yep, yep. We talked about all that.
Yep, we talked about that. So, thank you very much, Paul. That was very close.
Yes.
You got Brent's right on, and you... you know, I can understand somebody predicting a 6.5 from.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and that is all that I am seeing here on the Facebooks.
All right. Let's go over to the Discords.
All right.
On the Discords, we've got Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin. Kevin says, "Hi, Brent. Hi, Zach. Welcome back." Says, "FYI, this is a repost from last episode since I did both episodes last." Aha! "You were wondering if my notes would make more sense this time, so please scroll down to the bold text. Okie dokie. Those pertain to this episode only." So, briefly again, from last time, he said these two episodes have always been a favorite. Season 9, since I've been looking forward to this episode, decided to take a few notes. Yep. Okay, so we're going to scroll down to point number 7. "I can't tell if he's acting like this on purpose or if it's really just a bad actor. I don't know who he's talking about. Actually, now that I think about it, he's giving me Kristen Stewart and Twilight vibes."
I don't know who he's talking about.
Point number 6 before that was, "I wonder if the Ori have a closet full of those staff somewhere, or if one is made every time they make a new prior."
I may wonder if they're talking about the cigarette man.
Yeah, because it's point number 8 is, "Will someone please get that prior a cigarette?" That makes way more sense now. Point number 9, "I wonder how long it takes for the priors to master their mind powers because of Garrick." Uh-huh. 10, "Is personalizing hazmat suits with your name on it really the best use of taxpayer money?" That's right, we talked about that last time. Oh, I still missed it, I guess. I didn't notice the hazmat. We were talking about it. It's like, yeah, you want to make sure you put on yours. You know.
Yeah.
And number 11, "So based on what Garrick said, it seems the fire is actually death." Yes, there we go. That makes sense. Yes, yes. Okay. He concludes once more, "Episode is huge for multiple reasons. The only thing I'm having trouble deciding is whether or not the chevrons will be deducted due to obvious parallels that I've decided to avoid mentioning for this episode. I think probably COVID. There was a lot of collateral damage, so I'll just move on. I'm going to take a guess and say from 7 from you both." Right. So you got yours and really close to mine. Very nice.
Yeah. Really good. All right.
Kriamisk. Hi, Kriamisk.
Hi, Kriamisk.
Kriamisk says, "No matter who or where you are, you're gonna get it." And with a little barfy thing. So yeah. Oh no. Brent 4, Zach 4. Oh no, I liked it more than that.
Wow.
And then lastly we have Sean.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Sean. Sean says, 5 all around, which solid, but solid. We liked it more than that. If I get round to watching it, I'll rewrite. This was yesterday morning. So there are no Facebook predictions last episode because there was no predictions post on Facebook. Yeah, we learned about that.
Yeah.
Well, after the fact.
So what ended up happening last week, dear friends, is Facebook does things weird. And sometimes
it's Facebook.
Like I try to post things to the Facebook page and the Facebook group at the same time. And, you know, sometimes Facebook allows me to do that with just a press of a button. And sometimes it doesn't. And when it doesn't, especially when I haven't done it in a while, which I hadn't last week, I didn't realize that it didn't go to both. And I very much apologize.
Fine. Facebook is Facebook. Anyway, Sean kind of wraps it up by saying I have to do all the hard work instead, which is fine. That's not hard work. It's just reading words. He asks, "Are we still reading Apple podcast reviews in a style or theme?" The short answer is no, because we haven't done it in a long time. It was a fun bit. I'm not champing at the said bit to keep doing it, but I don't know. There's always a possibility, I suppose. I suppose it could show up at some point. Who knows?
Yeah, I haven't checked out Apple Podcasts to see what kind of reviews we've had of late. Because as Brent has alluded to, my podcast listening aggregator of choice is a podcast alligator.
Yes.
Outcast, I think, is what I listen to.
Yeah. Use. Yep.
And so I don't use Apple Podcasts very often. And so if I go to Apple Podcasts, it's because I remember, oh, I should maybe look and just see what's there for this podcast, and I forget often.
I get info on the analytics, and while our listenership is small but mighty, it's not zero on Apple Podcasts, but we get a lot more listens elsewhere. So it's just a thing. It's fine though. But thanks, John. Thanks for checking out on that one.
Yeah.
But that's all we've got on the Discords. Do we have any emails?
Yes. We have one. Let me refresh this just to make sure. Yes, we have one email from none other than Mr. David himself.
Hello, Mr. David.
Part two of the same Chevron encoding bias buffer from last time.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes.
A little background. I used to watch a lot of professional wrestling in the 90s and 2000s.
Okay.
In pro wrestling, the stars are generally faces, good guys, or heels, bad guys.
Sure.
You cheer for the faces, you jeer the heels.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you like them all. There is also the concept of the turn when a good guy goes bad, a heel turn.
Yeah.
Or a bad guy goes good, a face turn.
Uh-huh.
Garrick did an excellent face turn in this episode and really sold it.
Sure, okay.
We'll miss you, Garrick, and Lou Gossett Jr.
Yeah.
The other stuff was pretty good, too. Brent, 6 chevrons for a satisfactory ending to the Garrick/Jaffa storyline.
Yeah.
Zach, because now we have something to use against the Priors, 6 chevrons.
Dang it. So close.
So close. And those are our predictions.
Thank you. Thanks, David. Thank you for everybody for writing in. Appreciate that.
Yep. Okay, Brent.
Yes.
We have to turn our attention to the next episode of Stargate SG-1.
Okay.
The next episode is entitled Collateral Damage.
I see what Kevin did there. Yeah. Okay.
And so I ask you, what is collateral damage all about?
Collateral damage. Let's see here. Next time on Stargate SG-1, the SG-1 team travel through the gate to find themselves on a strange world. It's a world inhabited by people that are very into building things. They like making stuff. Over here, we see people that are making a giant structure, and inside it is glorious artwork. It's a museum. I don't know. Over there, we've got people that are making large earthwork things and are holding back water to use for producing electricity. It's a dam. And all through this whole civilization, people seem to be making things. It's very curious. The SG-1 team says, take us to your leader. And they take them to a person. And the person says, hello, I am the leader. And they say, this is fantastic that you're doing all of this working everywhere all the time. And the person says, "Why? Thank you. This is really our purpose. This is what we are here for. Is to make stuff." Oh, okay, that's interesting. We're from another planet over here. We're having a little tough time with the bad guys called the Ori. And the leader goes, "Oh, the Ori. Oh, I hate those guys. Oh, you know about? Oh, yeah, we hate them too." And so, we start having friendly dialogue, right? And so things are going good. Right up until there's a bit of a problem. You see, at one point,
things are going good until they stop.
Correct. At one point, it's Mitchell, Colonel Mitchell, who decides to help out with a building of something. So they're gonna put a roof on a building or something like that. So he comes on over and they grab some tools and they put their ladders up against the wall and start walking up and doing their thing. And Mitchell's like kind of right next to like the gutter of the thing, and he reaches a little bit too far away from where he should, so his center of gravity shifts and the ladder starts to move over and it smashes into the other one. And the guy that's helping goes, "Ah, you broke my ladders! My two ladders, the co-ladder, all damage!"
Okay. How would you like me to respond to
collateral,
this?
Collateral
No. I'm asking what kind of response is going to help you feel good about yourself?
Obviously, the right response, that this is the best dad joke you have ever heard in your entire life.
Okay. So I just need to be aware of this because I'm like, collateral damage.
Oh my gosh,
Brent. Oh, you need to write this stuff professionally. This is awesome.
I didn't ask you to insult me.
Did I go overboard?
Awesome.
Did I fall off the ladder?
Oh, it's damaged.
It is. I'm damaged.
We got some co-host lateral damage.
Yeah.
You're not damaged. I suspect that this is probably not about damaging ladders.
Probably not.
Not two of them?
Not two of them. Okay. Like there's like 17 of them.
Oh!
No, I'm just kidding. Okay. That's not true. Shall we watch the promo to find out what this is all about?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Are you ready?
I am ready.
I'm hitting play now.
Next time on Stargate SG-1.
Okay. A lot of smoochy-smoochy.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, there's... Uh-oh. Oh, no.
A murder has been committed, and Colonel Mitchell is the only suspect.
Uh-oh.
What? Emissary, what's going on? Where's Colonel Mitchell?
He's been taken into custody.
Why?
Wait.
He killed Dr. Varick.
What?
We're
this
someplace.
Is insane.
I suspect it was probably some kind of unpremeditated crime of passion. We all know they left the reception together.
Picked up the statue. And I hit her.
With a confession based off of a memory. How do you prove a memory is false?
What are we looking at here for?
Emotional resonance pattern of this memory is very similar to that of Dr. Garrick's murder.
Uh-oh. It's all next time on Stargate SG-1.
I mean, obviously he's been framed, but how and why? Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Is he going to present a statutory defense for his collateral damage?
There'll be a statue in there.
Sorry. Okay, good. I'm looking forward to the next one. Awesome.
Awesome. Yes. So that's our next episode. Probably not next week. Though we do have some special stuff happening next week for y'all.
Yep.
But then we'll come back with the collateral damage.
With that collateral damage.
The plan is in 2 weeks from now.
Yep.
So join us then. Let's see here. Tell us what you think. If we got something right or wrong, or if we said something in this episode that really made you think about something, let us know. You can email us at walkingthroughthestargate@gmail.com. You can, of course, go to the Facebooks or the Discords or wherever and have those conversations there. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/walkingthrough or go to the website WTTS.space.
Space!
And hit that coffee cup in the lower right-hand corner. And with all that, I say I'm Zach.
And I'm Brent.
This has been Walking Through the Stargate. See you next time.
Bye!
Carter, dial it up. Get these people home.